to be instant motion. Makes your daddy want to rock.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome! Welcome to the big show. Welcome to this very special Thanksgiving Day edition of the Dory Monson Show. I hope you're hanging out with family, friends, loved ones, maybe getting your dinner ready right now. Here's what we've done here at the Dory Monson Show. We want to be with our families today, too, but we also want to be with you. And so we have put together some of our favorite segments from the last few weeks and months here, and I think you're really going to enjoy what we have coming up for you. I think Thanksgiving is my favorite of holidays. I'm such a traditionalist. My Aunt Sissy, who I just loved so much, she would always make this apple and banana salad. And it was, oh, that's all it was. Apples, bananas, and whipped cream. And I would whip the cream. And I have such fond childhood memories of that we now still have apple and banana salad every Thanksgiving. I've tried everything with the roast, tried smoking it. Of course, I've done the deep fried turkey. And we're just going with oven baked today because we're going to do the traditional stuffing in the turkey. So that's what we're up to this afternoon. But like I said, I hope that you are having a fantastic day filled with love of people around you and good food. And of course, I tell you this all the time, but not often enough. When I count my blessings, you are very high on my list of blessings. Very happy Thanksgiving, and enjoy some of our best of segments here on this Thanksgiving Day edition of the Dory Monson Show. Did I mention how happy I am to be here today?
It was a close call.
Oh my goodness, I'm happy.
We're happy to have you back.
I wish there was a song that summed up how I feel today. If only somebody could put it to music, my feelings. Freedom does taste like reality. I'm free. Oh, man. Ursula, Nicole saw me right after my ordeal from hell yesterday.
Why was it so bad? So did you look? Because you said, oh, my gosh, you really felt like you were almost dying.
I was almost physically ill. Yes. I think that's what I said.
I was dying. What the heck?
Well, we had all these high hopes of having fun with it, too. Like, you'd be able to call in and we'd do this, like, Dory scrap.
I was sick to my stomach. Why
were you it didn't work out.
Okay, let me just, because I got a lot of news to get to here. But so yesterday, I had to report to jury duty. So I go down there to the, I parked here at the radio station about 7:30, took an Uber downtown. Had to wade through there are people just
It's scary going into the courthouse.
There are two Seattle cop cars facing in either direction. One guy's over the hood in handcuffs at 7:45 a.m. And there are people just screaming maniacally. So then I go in and I report for jury duty. And so I decide.
You're in the big room?
I'm in the big room. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Felt like I was in the big house. So I was going to do show prep because I had this fantasy that I might get kicked out by noon. Uh-huh. But then I realized, well, that's not going to happen. So I just start trying to read my Kindle. But I'm just getting this wave of anxiety because I'm trapped someplace against my will. And so then they call the very first group. And this had never happened to me before. I'd done jury duty, but I'd never been called to... Uh-huh. To the courtroom. Uh-huh. I had never been in a courtroom in my life until yesterday.
Seriously?
I realized that as I was walking in. I have never spent one second of my life in a courtroom before yesterday. Okay, so they read numbers. And for the first case of the day, there are 50 numbers. Mm-hmm. And I'm number 32.
And I'm thinking, well, that was OJ's number, and nothing's ever gone wrong for a number 32 in court. So I'm number 32.
That's actually sad.
And then I get up to the courtroom, and so they put 1 through 12 in the jury box.
Right. And for people who haven't done it, that's how then they start questioning them.
Right. Well, they start questioning all 50 of us. And so, and maybe, I know that this is routine to some people, but all this was new to
me.
So I'm doing all this as a public service announcement. So then they briefly explain the case.
Mm-hmm.
There was an accident. I don't know how much I'm allowed to say.
I think you can say, but it's not going to, you can say you're not on the jury.
And I didn't
you're
hear
not,
any
yeah,
of the
not,
details.
Exactly.
There was an accident on I-5. The couple that
Are you
was,
sure you should say this?
I don't care. What are they going to do? I have free speech. And the truth is my defense.
It's not going to influence anything.
Right. And I didn't hear any details of the case.
You're fine.
So there was an accident on I-5. The couple that was the plaintiff, they're suing the guy who caused the accident. So he's there with his attorney. And they're suing the state of Washington. And apparently they were alleging that some DOT design contributed to this.
Right there, you should have been booted within the first minute.
Okay, so then they go, they start with, is there anybody, they start with the plaintiff's attorneys. Is there anybody here who could not be fair to us?
Oh, my God.
And I raised number 32. And I said, well, you're suing the state of Washington, which to me, and by the way, there were like 10 people who,
of course,
who raised their thing. First they asked for hardship, and I didn't have any legit hardship.
Yeah, but so people do. I mean, so there's...
Well, yeah, so they got rid of like 15 people out of the 50.
Wow, that was an easy...
Oh, everyone had a sob story. It was just
because
people...
Because even in my case, they didn't. But anyway, okay. So 15 people out.
Okay, so then is there anybody who can't be fair to us, the plaintiffs? And I'm one of many who raises my card. So number 32 is up in the air. And I said, well, if you're suing the state of Washington, you're suing the taxpayers. And I have a real problem with, awarding, I go, monetary damages, fine, punitive damages.
Okay, at this point, have they figured out who you are?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I don't know. They didn't say anything. I said, but I will have trouble giving taxpayer money to you.
Uh-huh.
So the plaintiff attorney turns to the judge, and he had done this for a couple previously. And go, I would like this juror dismissed for cause. And
well, the other guy's not
for the two earlier ones.
Yeah,
I would like him. I'd like number 24 dismissed for cause. And the judge goes, number 24, you may go. Number 28, you may go. And they says, I'd like number 32 dismissed for cause. And the judge says, denied.
What?
Yeah. So now I'm thinking they're just screwing with me.
Wait,
they're
the other two?
Screwing with me because of my radio show.
What did the other two say as their excuse?
Essentially the same thing.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm denied. I get denied. So now I'm thinking.
That's funny.
Okay. Oh, yeah. It's hilarious. So now I'm starting to worry, and I'm texting Nicole, and I said, yeah, they're dismissing people left and right, and I ain't one of them. So now I'm starting to get a little nervous. Okay, so then the guy for the attorney general gets up, and he goes, is there anybody who could not be fair to our side? Number 32 goes up. And I was one of four cards that went up for that. So he asked, number 1, why could you not be fair? Number 18, why could you not be fair? Number 20, why could you not be fair? He doesn't ask me.
No way.
I'm the only one who doesn't get asked.
What?
So now I figure, well, now Bob Ferguson has told them to screw with me.
Yep.
I swear to you, I was the only one who didn't get asked who raised his card.
Or you were number 32 and they figured they weren't going to get to you.
Oh, I'll get to that. Okay. So then they ask some other question and I raise my card. It's like 20 minutes later and I'm holding my card up in the air until they call on me. I'm not going to let them not call on me. And I go, I want to go back about 20 minutes to when you asked if I could be fair to the attorney general.
No way. Wait, okay, yeah.
I said, I believe that Bob Ferguson is the most dangerous politician in our state's history. And I go, there's no way I could be fair to the attorney general's office. And he just smiles at me, doesn't turn to the judge and ask me to get dismissed. I am telling you guys. I am telling
you. They were toying with you.
They
because no way.
Screwing with me. The judge was screwing with me. the attorney was screwing with me, the attorney general's guy. So then I figure, okay.
And no one is snickering within the jury pool at this point? Like, okay, we know who this is.
And I'm getting physical. Oh, I don't know if I mentioned this. They said the trial will likely last a month.
You did. You said it could be like 3 weeks.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, well, I'll be off the air for a month. I'll have to, what am I going to do, Uber downtown every day? Oh, Lord.
That's ridiculous. What kind of speedy trial is that?
I have no idea.
Oh, no, there are trials that could go, you're lucky it wasn't months.
No, I swear to you, every second of this was constructed just to screw with me. So, I might have left the courtroom, and maybe they all burst out in laughter and said, okay, you can all go, we're done. Maybe it was all a sham. So anyway, then they have 12 in the jury box, and now they say, finally, are there any of you who cannot be unbiased? And four of them, I can't be unbiased. And so then they dismissed four in the box. Well, she has to fill the box sequentially.
Right.
So it's like, okay, numbers, and they already dismissed a whole bunch, but there are 12 people ahead of me, not in the jury box. So now four of them get moved in. So now there were 11 ahead of me. So now there are seven ahead of me, but the jury box is full. Now the lawyers can do their peremptory drops.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the plaintiff's lawyer says, the jury panel is fine with us, Your Honor. I'm thinking, well, I'm fine. There's seven ahead of me, and one of the attorneys is fine. And so then the guy from the attorney general's office, who was there just to get me, he says, yeah, we'd like to get rid of number three. So number three gets up, okay, number 22 take his place. We want to get rid of number four. Four get up, 25 takes his place. Now there are only five ahead of me. And then one of the people who went in, the plaintiff's lawyer, says, oh, yeah, we don't like the one who just went in. We want to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, there are three ahead of me. And we want to get rid of number 10. There are two ahead. We want to get rid of number 12. There's one guy sitting next to me, number 31. I'm number 32. And then they get rid of number 7. And number 31, who's sitting next to me, has to go into the jury box, which is like going to prison for a month. If you are seated on this jury, you are in prison for 1 month of your life, except it's worse than prison because they don't let homeless people scream at you on your way to and from your cell.
Just remember, there are other people who, like me, were begging to get on that jury box. Oh, okay, but keep going.
So then I'm literally the next person up. And the plaintiff's attorney says, the jury's fine with us. The defendant's attorney, jury pool's fine with us.
I cannot believe it.
I burst into a smile, and the judge, who's sitting at the other end of the courtroom, goes, boy, that was a close one for you.
He did?
Oh, you're showing your sexist bias.
She did?
She.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought you had already said that it was a guy.
No. So, yes,
awesome. She knew.
There's one that we have talked about recently. Dang. So I wonder if it was her then.
I don't know.
But that's hilarious.
No, it wasn't. I'm
sweating.
Literally.
Were you having like the whistling contest kind of sweat? You know, those beads like are flying off your forehead?
Yes. I got in the Uber. The Uber guy, I think, didn't want to pick me up because I looked like I had Ebola. I think I was bleeding out of my eyeballs. By the time this thing finally wrapped up. So I get in the back of the Uber. Nicole met me here at the station because I had to pick something up. And then I get home. I took my blood pressure when I went home. Oh, plus, there was bad traffic.
Oh, no.
I took my blood pressure. Yeah. Ursula, my BP's been really good.
It has been.
It was through the flipping roof when I got home. It'd been like 90 minutes since I'd been released. I took it 2 hours later, and it was 120 over 77. It was fine. But I had worked myself into a frenzy like you cannot believe. And I'm telling you, and I don't know if
I cannot believe it got that close.
But I suppose if I had gotten bumped up, either attorney, and I tried desperately to make
someone was going to bump you.
I tried to make both attorneys hate me.
I know,
but like I said,
Attorney General and State Transportation Department. I mean, those are like two that you
my main targets.
I can't even believe you got that close.
But then also the plaintiff's attorneys going after the taxpayers, which is one of my passions. So I tried to make the attorneys on both sides hate me. And I figured maybe if I'd gotten up to the jury box, one of them would have used a drop to get rid of me.
But then at the same time, they both have something for and against you. So maybe they thought you were fair.
Okay. But the fact that the judge, that her last words were, "You got close."
Yeah,
shows to me she knew who you were.
Yes. And that's why I think they put me at number 32. I don't think that was some random draw.
No, because I was about 32 or 33, and I got nowhere close.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. And then it was all this theater that had been constructed. And the fact that the plaintiff's attorney...
Like the Truman Show.
The plaintiff's attorney asked to have me dismissed for cause... Denied. She wasn't going to let me go 3 hours earlier. She wanted me to sit there and sweat for all of my transgressions against King County, for all of my horrible misdeeds. I bet Dow Constantine played some role in how this whole thing was put together yesterday. And I guarantee you Bob Ferguson had some...
No proof.
Guaranteed. When...
This is funny, though, but no proof.
When I am one of four people who says I cannot be fair to the AG's office, and they asked the other three why not, and then ignored me? Oh, jeez.
Hey, by the way, when you got home, did you check out your tires and the side of your car?
That's
all good.
Story.
Oh, no.
No, but, oh.
Anyway, well, welcome back.
I was that close to not being here, not only today, but for the rest of August.
Oh, no, you were going to be coming in to record that show at night.
Yeah. So then Nicole's idea at the lunch break, when I could finally call in, she goes, "Well, if you get placed on the jury, you can just record segments late at night and before you go into the court in the morning."
And everyone would have.
So I'm gonna be here. I'm still going to have to do the show. And then
that's the sign of an excellent producer.
And then sit in purgatory for 7-8 hours in the middle of summer. I don't know what I would have done if I'd gotten seated on that jury. I truly don't know what I would have done. I don't know if I would have showed up today. I might have been in contempt of court.
No, you would have been on a jury.
No, I might have gone to jail for being in contempt. I don't know. It sounded just awful to me. Oh, did I yap through the whole big lead?
Yes, you did.
Jeez. Okay, anyway, the bottom line here is...
I'm free.
And I know, the thing is, if I was a cool customer, I wouldn't have let the judge... and the AG's office know how much they got to me. I would have just come in here and say, jury duty yesterday, didn't see it, no big deal, let's get to the big lead. But I'm playing right into their hands because I know that that whole thing was carefully manufactured. Okay, tell you what, I'm going to carry over the big lead into the next segment. I'm glad that you're there, I'm glad that I'm here, I'm glad we're together. And we have lots more as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.
But you've been told many times before, Messiah's pointed to go. No one has the guts to leave the temple.
Tell me likey. Tell me want wingy.
All right, fellow babies, and now it's time to go to our live remote man on the scene at the Pinedale Shopping Mall for the big WKRP turkey giveaway. So take it away, Les Nessman.
Really glad that you are with us on this Thanksgiving weekend. We are playing back some of our favorite moments, highlights, best ofs from the last couple of months. You know, so we can get a couple of days off with the family. And because the Seahawks... have a Monday night football game, it means that I get Sunday off too. So it's a full 4-day weekend. And on Monday, by the way, we will be doing our show live
from the CenturyLink Field Event Center from noon till 2. And then at 2 o'clock, I will shift into our Seahawks pregame coverage. And that is going to be a huge game for the Seahawks. Monday night, the Minnesota Vikings have an 8-3 record, and they are playing about as well as any team in the NFL, as are the Seahawks. And so you match up those two teams on Monday Night Football, and that's going to be fantastic. So that'll be our schedule when we are back on the air live on Monday. The Dory Monson Show, live from the CenturyLink Event Center from noon till 2, and then Seahawks football pregame starts right at 2 o'clock, and we will take you right up to kickoff of Monday Night Football, my pregame show co-hosts and I, because you are listening to your home of the Seattle Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. And between now and then, enjoy some of our favorite segments, interviews, and moments from the last few weeks here on The Dory Monson Show. Well, for those of us who live in the city, there are just way too many city people who don't get a chance to experience how salt of the earth the people who live in our more rural areas are. With our busy lives, often we don't have time to help anybody out. I heard about something that happened over in Eastern Washington, in Ritzville, to be exact, and I think it is one of those stories that reveals the character of small towns that still exists in America today. And the man at the center of this story is Larry Yockey, and he joins us here on Cairo Radio. Mr. Yockey, it's really a pleasure to talk to you this afternoon.
Pleasure to talk to you and spread a little good joy to everybody.
Yes, indeed, even though there's a bit of sadness attached with your story. Tell me about your farm that you have over there, Larry.
What I have, I raise dry land wheat over here in Ritzville, Washington, which is probably anybody that's familiar with Eastern Washington and have been to Spokane. It's along I-90, about 60 miles west of Spokane. I don't have any irrigated. It's all dry land wheat. I had about 1,200 acres this year that I cut. So,
Okay, and that job got particularly challenging for you this year. Tell us why.
Yes, it did. In February, I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. It was a melanoma, which started with a dot on my back, and by the time we got all the scans done, it had spread to my whole skeletal system, mostly ribs and hips and back, and it was pretty debilitating to start with. For the first month or two, I could barely get around. We started taking a treatment with the help of Seattle Cancer Care and Cancer Care Northwest up here in Spokane, working together. We got a program put together. We kind of knocked the cancer back in the first 2 or 3 months pretty good.
Yep.
But the damage had been done so severely to my skeletal system that it was just, I was still weak, limited to lifting 10 to 15 pounds maximum, warned not to fall down, all those good things. I was basically a brittle man.
Yeah.
So it limited what I could do. I hired some operations done this spring, hoping for the best. We got most of our work done, and then, of course, at this time of year is the time to harvest, and I had about 1,200 acres a week to harvest.
Okay, let me pause. Let me pause right there. So in a year in which you are fully healthy, are you able to work the land by yourself, or do you always have to hire help, even under the best of conditions?
In my size farm, I can work it by myself, all except for at harvest. And then I run one machine, and I hire a couple truck drivers as well. So the only time I ever hire normally is just a couple guys for 3 weeks to cut it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, got it. And if you lose a season because of your physical condition, what does that mean for you financially?
Oh, it's devastating over here. Ag is ag. It's like a lot of businesses. It's we operate on a pretty thin margin over here.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's my income off this farm is bordering on at least 95% of my total income, or 90%. My wife works on the side, but the majority of my income by far comes off this farm.
Okay. I also saw that you and I have something in common. You also have 3 daughters. Is that right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. How old are they? My girls are 29, 25, and 24 now. How old are your daughters?
We go about from the late 30s to the youngest one being 24.
Okay. All right. So we're right there together. So,
yeah.
So, I mean, and I also understand that, you know, dads, we've been the breadwinner our whole life. And, you know, I dealt with a couple of medical things last year. And I know that it's a pride thing. It's there's just a lot of stuff going on when you're not able to do all the things that you want to do.
That's correct. It's just it's almost as devastating mentally as it is physically. You're right.
Yeah. So and out of all of this, Larry, something just absolutely beautiful happened. Tell me about all the neighbors, the 60 neighbors who live around the Yaki farm there in Ritzville.
Right. We had people come in. What had happened was they knew what kind of shape I was in. A few of the people in here that I'm around all the time knew the shape I was in. I knew something was up about a month and a half ago, and they said, don't worry about working on your equipment for harvest. I think we've got something going on. I think we can cover you. So I kind of suspected that they were probably going to set up what we call a harvest bee, where everybody gets on one day, they get all these machines, all these trucks together, and they just come over to a place and hammer that harvest in a day. And I finally heard about it, gave them the go-ahead, and two gentlemen that are friends of mine, Brian Doyle and Jim Hyder, were the ones that put this thing together, and we're just beyond all expectations, man. This combine started showing up late Saturday. We were going to cut Sunday, and unbelievable. What I normally take, 12 to 16 days to cut in a normal year, we did it in about 6 or 7 hours. We just knocked it out.
My good. And literally you had 60 neighbors participating in
this? Yes, at least 60. We had a lot of people standing around. We had donuts, coffee in the morning. Some of the women in town and the guys in town provided, which was kind of a good time. We had the volunteer fire department out here, a couple trucks just in case we got a fire going. The fire danger is fairly high, of course, in Eastern Washington this time of year. So we just had everybody putting in everybody had a lot of fun, too, doing it. That's the main thing. Everybody stayed safe. And it's unbelievable in these small towns and communities how they can come together like that. No complaining, just get the job done. You know, that's what we do. So.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a very emotional guy, Larry. Are you?
Oh, not much, but let me tell you, Sunday I was. Yeah, Sunday I was.
Just describe that. Describe that emotion when you looked out there and saw all these friends and neighbors working your field.
Oh, I'm just telling you, I drove around in the morning, all that grain was standing out there, and within about 6 or 7 hours, it's all gone. Everybody's wrapping up, but I tried to get around best I could, thank everybody in person. By the end of the day, I'm hurt pretty bad physically, but I'm telling you, I was choked up. I was literally choked up, and they were too.
Sounds like you've touched a lot of lives there, and vice versa.
Well, I think so. I think so. You don't realize it until tragedy or something like this hits. It's just nice to see. I lived over in the big city. I lived over in the Seattle area for 12 years. I went to college there and started working for the Boeing company over there. And it's sad to see that I think some communities have the same attitude. It's too bad more don't. Just, you know, meet your neighbors. If you got a problem, you know, whether it be a natural disaster or whatever, pull together, man.
Yeah.
It'll give you such a good feeling to help your neighbors. It's unbelievable.
Hey, and I hope you don't mind my asking this. I just don't know enough about skin cancer. What's the prognosis for you, sir?
Well, it's not terrible right now. Like I said, we've set it back pretty good, but it is melanoma stage 4, which is the bad skin cancer. There's different skin cancers. This is the bad one.
Yeah.
We've got it on the run now. I don't know how far we can knock it back and how long we can keep it knocked back. You know, you just don't know. It's month to month, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah, understood. Well, I know that one of the things that cancer docs have always told me is that attitude plays a huge role, and when you are surrounded by so much love, I can only imagine that that's going to be an unbelievable benefit as you continue this battle.
It definitely is, and it kind of gives me more reason to fight it. I want to be around to help these guys some more, too, and these people, you know. So.
Yeah. What a beautiful community. What a beautiful story, Larry.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you for sharing it with me and my listeners, and all my best to you, sir.
All the best to you, listeners.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. It's Larry Yockey over in Ritzville, Washington, where 60 neighbors came to help him take care of his 1,200-acre farm in a time of need. And that's just a beautiful story. Love to hear your thoughts on all this. You can text me at 98973. That's our text line, 98973. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because I just adore this story. All right, we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show.
Tell me likey. Tell me want wingy.
Oh, glad you are with us on this Thanksgiving weekend. Nicole and I are taking a couple of days off here, as are many of you. So I imagine that some people who work during the days are tuned into our show on Thanksgiving Day. Maybe you're getting ready for your family meal on Friday. Maybe you're sitting in long lines, getting to the mall. Does anybody go to the mall anymore on Black Friday? I had a program director when I first started out, and he wanted me to work the day after Thanksgiving because it was his theory that was one of the most important days of the year to expose me and my radio show to potential new listeners. Because on Black Friday, you know, we're talking 25 years ago almost, but there would be long lines of people in the afternoons who would be sitting, you know, there'd be a line off the freeway exits to get to Northgate and South Center and Alderwood, and you had people in their cars. And he said, this is a great day to expose you and your radio show to people who might not ordinarily listen to you. Now, this was back before we had podcasts. It was back when we were still trying to make a mark, as opposed to now, when we're firmly entrenched as a beloved Seattle radio institution. Okay, I don't know about the beloved part. Seattle radio institution? At least I know that part is true. But now, you know, we're resting on our laurels and not working the day after Thanksgiving. I guess that's okay. But we still care about the quality of the show. So we've put together some of our favorite segments from the last couple of months for you to enjoy, interviews that we've done. And then again, this reminder that so many of our best segments, because we love all the exclusive stories that we bring you here on the Dory Monson Show, and so many of our exclusives come on tips from listeners, and we follow up so many of them, and it's allowed us to break as many stories as, you know, any radio show in the country. And for that, I have you to thank, because you give us fresh material all the time. And here's the other thing. There's a bunch of us, you and me, the listeners to this show, who feel like we're in this fight together against a region that has become increasingly out of touch with us and our values. And, you know, we have each other. And I appreciate that very much. Because when I talk to folks who listen to this show, and I realize that just the madness that has engulfed so much of the politics, and not just politics, but the judicial process in our region, you know, the revolving door where we're just letting really violent people back out on the streets, we have each other to try to fight all of that. So, anyway, glad you're listening to us on this Thanksgiving weekend. Sit back and enjoy some of our favorite segments and interviews from the last couple of months here on the Dory Monson Show.